All the Rage with John Bowd on www.traxfm.org.
Welcome. We haven't been live in a while, but we've had plenty to play, so don't worry about that. And a lot of the stuff we're playing may be several years ago, but it's bloody still relevant. Welcome, John Bowd, All the Rage. We've got bits and pieces to talk about. I was saying that if me and John never scripted anything, we still probably could do a three-hour show. But lately I've just decided that before I speak to John, not this particular time, I want him to do renditions of popular songs. I was actually going to get him to do a Whitney Houston rendition, but he did it already and I didn't record it. John, we're talking about... One of the things we're talking about, John... is I think it's Deliveroo and an accident they had on duty, and in regards to what their legal standing is in regards to health and safety, something basic like that, John.
Yes. Okay, let's jump straight into this. So Deliveroo and your consumer rights. So this I'm talking to you and texting at the same time. However, I'm just going to ruin a little bit of radio magic. I'm texting Dave to tell him something, which I didn't want to tell him on the air because I thought it would sound better if I didn't. So I'm ruining my own show by doing this stupid thing. Anyway, just let me finish doing that.
No, because while you do that, I'll try and give a bit of background. So John rang me in the week, and apparently I know a little bit of things about legal. And it's true, for a huge business like Deliveroo and their workers, what would it mean for them if they had an accident? Who's responsible? So for most of us who are employed by someone, there is something in an act called duty of care. That's the employer to the employee. That's the work, the boss to you. So when you turn up for work, they have a duty of care. It's an act from 1974. They only have to do the bare minimum, but they have to do it. Things like risk assessments, making sure you're safe and things like that. Now, you may say, oh, what a load of woke rubbish, you know. If I trip over, I trip over. Well, yes, you're right. It's silly, and I don't mean to be woke, even though the Act is from 1974. What I'm saying is if you fall over, say, for example, on the way to work or whilst you're working, or you trip over or you have an electric shock and you go and you have to take sick leave, you would attract things like sick pay. And then if the employer says, well, it's not my fault, actually you were working for them at that time, so it is your fault. And you might have to take time off. You might have permanent injury. These are all the things that you have to think about. It's not about being woke and, you know, I'm all right, Jack, don't be silly, walk it off, you know, that sort of thing, even though you've only got one leg.
Those great things that have made the building industry such a bastion of great workers' rights over the years, and no problems there at all.
Yeah,
so I'm back on form now, Dave. We'll go into this in detail. All it was, I was actually texting you to say I couldn't hear you very well, but I've just found the audio on Zoom and I've turned it up a little bit so I can hear you better, that was all. It just went a bit funny for a minute, that was all, and I was struggling to hear you.
Sorry to
ruin the radio magic, folks.
No, because there was a bit, I could tell there was a bit of delay, and that's okay. So John was asking who's responsible. Well, actually, Deliveroo drivers, they don't have an employer, and this is the issue. Uber drivers just unionised and were deemed to be, they could be unionised, which really upset a lot of people, elite people, shall I say, and Deliveroo would probably or should join a union and go and file a tribunal. I guarantee that will end up in the Supreme Court and it will be fought all the way. But they will win. They will win that argument. When that person is performing a job, they would fall under that act called a duty of care. John?
Yes. So interestingly here, Dave has given us the conclusion to this story from our perspective. We both think the Deliveroo riders should form a union, join a union, which is what they're doing now anyway. They're involved with the IWGB most commonly, but also with GMB a little bit. We've talked about that many times on here. I tend to favour IWGB. But what we'll do now is we'll explain the story to all of you, and then you've already got the conclusion, and you can see if you actually agree on the basis. Should this lot unionise? Okay, so here's an example. This is regarding something that happened in Aldershot back in December of 2022. A Deliveroo rider got into an altercation with a customer, and the results were quite shocking. Jennifer Rocha, who arrived at the wrong address down the street from Stephen Jenkinson, had an altercation with him. He had placed an order and he came down the street to collect it, but he did not bring his phone, which contained the delivery code number. So obviously the driver was, the rider, I should say, was unwilling to hand over the order. Otherwise you might be giving somebody free food and not to the person who ordered it. An argument took place and Rocha bit Jenkinson's thumb, severing it just above the knuckle. Now, the BBC reports that he raised his hand to her in some way, but the judge has charged Rocha with GBH and she may face a prison sentence. So far, so criminal situation, or whatever you want to call it, criminal act, been gone through the courts, gone through the legal process. Okay. However, Rocha was not employed directly by Deliveroo, as nobody is, and she had been working as a substitute rider using someone else's account, which is something they allow their riders to do. This was putting the responsibility upon the rider, however, to check the work status of the substitute. Okay, very debatable. We'll come back to that one. Now, this is done because Deliveroo class everyone who works for them as an independent, self-employed worker, which we see across the sector that this company works in. But because Rocha was working as a substitute for another driver, Deliveroo are saying they cannot be held legally responsible. And so far, it appears they're getting away with that. Deliveroo says their riders are covered by the company's own free insurance. Okay, well, I don't know a lot about that part of it, but I'd like to know more. So if any Deliveroo riders out there want to tell us about this, or anything else for that matter, including your unionisation efforts, and please feel free to give us a call. Mr. Jenkinson has tried to take legal action against Deliveroo over his loss of earnings, as he has been unable to work since the incident took place. He is by training a plumber. It has also been necessary to relearn basic tasks for him after having part of his big toe grafted onto his hand in order to make up for where the part of the thumb has gone missing. Jenkinson is in debt now due to not being able to work, and he has experienced relationship breakdown, among other things. Now, in reporting this story, the BBC also found figures that indicate across the UK, three vehicles a week are seized by police because they are uninsured for business use. Again, this is what happens when you put all of the responsibility onto an overworked and stressed out workforce rather than getting somebody to do it yourself for your company, which, by the way, the company should be required to do. That's my position on this. I'm revealing the conclusion already, but there you are. Now, the BBC also includes an interesting quote from Mr. Jenkinson's lawyer, Alex Barley, who works from Slater Healy's, who said, quote, companies operating in the gig economy should be held to account for the actions of the people they rely on for their significant profits. The practice of substitution should be stopped and the company should be required to carry out necessary checks on all the people working for them. End of quote. No doubt defenders of all this will say it's not Deliveroo's fault that their non-employee attacked someone, but they run a service that does employ people. Hence, they can terminate their position on the platform whenever they feel like it. So they do have some responsibility. They basically run the infrastructure. Okay, that is the platform. Now, you can't possibly, to my mind at least, run something like that and have no responsibility for any of the people that work for you, no responsibility for any action that takes place during their work hours, etc., etc. It is up to them to maintain checks and balances on who is working via their platform. This is called responsibility, folks. It's an old-fashioned notion. And funnily enough, most children and teenagers I meet have a better sense of it than most adults I meet these days, especially those in business. Deliveroo also allows riders to share their position on the platform with self-appointed substitutes, although this is a common thing for self-employed folks and not an exclusive Deliveroo thing. Nevertheless, this is what's got us into this trouble. Deliveroo only do this because of their obsession from them and companies like theirs with achieving the absolute nirvana that is zero labour costs. They will screw over their employees and customers in their zeal to achieve this. They don't care who gets damaged and in what way. They have created a wild west, quite frankly, in employment. But the main thing that stands out here for me is the potential for political organising around this case. That is getting customer backing for proper employment status for gig workers. It is clearly in the interest of the customers, and we already know, as you've, if you're a regular listener to this show, you'll know our position on this, that it's very, very much in the interests of the workforce. It reminds me of when rail workers go out and the media tells you that it's always about pay, but this has also in the past been about health and safety concerns, whether it's from the actual health and safety basis of what's on the station to station guards to an interesting experience I had a few weeks ago of a station guard not being present on on Lee Station, I think it was, that end of London. And myself, my partner, spoke with a blind man who needed to get to Maida Vale. Now, we managed to lead him over to the other station, press the button on the little buzzer thing that's on the wall, and tell them that this geezer was here and he needed help. They replied, oh, well, there should be someone there. We're like, yes, there should be someone here. Anyway, this guy needs help getting on the train. You know, 20-odd minutes later, maybe they send somebody down. I don't see how that's efficient either. You've got to send people out for effectively is like emergency call out every day. You might as well just have somebody on the station. Now, just employ some people, you tight bastards. Anyway, that's one aspect. What you're talking about here with rail workers is their willingness to stand up and lose pay to make sure all of us are safe and taken care of. And that's something that should be remembered. When they go out on, if you don't like people going out and strike for pay, that's up to, I mean, you're wrong, but that's up to you. But don't always assume that's what it's about. It's just people wanting to get a bigger check. I mean, God forbid actual working people want more money for the work that they do. No, of course not. You know, if they worked as some kind of speculator or subcontractor to a company that doesn't really exist but has a ridiculously high value on the stock market, no, it'd absolutely be fine for them to reap ridiculous amounts of money that no human being could ever possibly earn. But God forbid the people who make our railways run actually want some money for what they do. Or the people that bring you your dinner or even your breakfast because you're so fucking incapable that you can't even make your own breakfast every morning. No, they shouldn't actually get any decent pay terms and conditions or anything else. People who are so hungry that they resort to cannibalism, as we've seen in this case. If you're listening, Mr. Jenkinson, that was just a joke. Calm down. I actually support entirely what you're doing. So when you see these gig workers going out on strike, give them your support. We already have seen action this past February on Valentine's Day, and we will no doubt see more going forward. But absolutely, to me, so it's a real simple one for me, Dave. I mean, I take this on the basis of as a trade union issue. Absolutely, they should unionise, and customers should support them because they can then hold a company to account better if something goes wrong. But again, as you said at the top, you and I had a discussion about this on the basis of of the legal, because I was fascinated. I wanted to talk about this before we did it on the show. Yeah, so the legal basis of this. So in your professional opinion, the union thing we've already covered, yeah, they're gonna go for a union. Delivery will go to the Supreme Court and argue it every single step of the way, but we'll still win in the end. What do you think's the likelihood of actually changing a company position on something like this, especially after a high-profile case like this?
Well, I mean, so there's two things. There's two things of the law here. Obviously, one, sometimes me and you talk about people, like, you know, those people that go, who's going to pay for that, those sort of people, and we get really angry and there's no one there, but I'm just saying it's all right for us to be angry at something. But there's two bits of the law they've broken here, if we're going to be really British and all that, you know. One is it's...
They've broken British law, so let's be fair, this is sacrosanct and holy, so yes, absolutely.
So one, it's criminal because you've assaulted someone. And two, until we address self-employed workers, certainly for Deliveroo, I believe that it should be an employment law breach or an employment law issue. Because the question you've got to ask yourself, even if you're one of those people that me and John speak to, if that person is delivering food for that company, who employs them? Who's employing them when they're delivering? That's the question. If you say it's Deliveroo, then they should be applicable for the Duty of Care Act from 1974. What this does is it employs people, says you're working for us tonight, but we're not responsible for you. Right, even if you're not, and I'm not being woke or anything, I'm just saying that's the question. Now, 9 times out of 10, you'd say, no, they're working for Deliveroo. So then they would be applicable for the duty of care. The person should. And thirdly, this is the main thing, John, if that person needs advice, it's best off a trade union or a representative, right? Because those people are trained. Because how many times have we gone to people and they've said, you need to go and see someone about that, or Citizens Advice Bureau, or I don't know. I don't know. You know, 9 times out of 10 people will say, I don't know. Who? Oh, you heard someone beat your finger off. I don't know who to go to. I don't know. It's normally a trade union. If you've got a trade union in your workplace, they will know what to do, who's applicable, who's at fault, and the processes, because trade unions train their people. They don't train them to take them out on strike. That's just don't listen to that. You know, this walkout thing. It's not. They're trained on loads of stuff. And if they don't know, they'll ring branch secretary of the area delivery, or area rep, or they'll ring up someone at their headquarters. And it's sad, really. It's sad that these experts in trade unions, it's a declining membership across the world. It's sad, really, because what's reducing there, or what you've believed to not join a union, you know, your rights at work. This person's got no one to go to, you know, for advice, you know, and the government of countries in this world convince people not to join a union. Not because anything, they just don't want you to have any rights. You've got to get your head around that. You've got to get, if me and John are talking about it, because we're in it, you know, and we understand it. But you need more people like that. You need to join a union or form a union, because they're convincing you to basically don't have any rights. We want to self-employ everyone, so you don't have any rights. And when you go sick, we're not going to pay you. And we're going to get richer. And we've been convinced that the more richer we get, we're going to trickle down that money down to the normal people. It hasn't worked in 40 years. What makes you think it's going to work now? John?
Yeah, completely. And I mean, in this particular case, this guy does have a solicitor. Obviously, we've quoted him. But even then, I mean, who can afford that most of the time? I mean, the guy's already in debt. And, you know, I don't know exactly the status of what he's got on here, but it wouldn't surprise me if some degree of that comes from legal costs, or the threat of legal costs, which, of course, the other thing we need to talk about too is the way they use legal costs to threaten people. This is so supporting what we do, obviously getting your advice from people like us, but also shout out to our good friend Pamela, among other people. Law centres, local law centres, wherever you are in the country, whether it's directly through Citizens Advice Bureau or it's independent specifically, you've likely got a law centre. So support that law centre, use their resources if you can, raise money for them too, because none of them are properly funded. So you can always do stuff like that. You know, every time, if you fancy doing a bicycle ride or a half marathon or a full one, if you're fit enough or whatever else, raise some money for a law centre. It's always good use. It goes to people who literally are being priced out of being able to access the law in a fair way, like any citizen should be able to expect that they have a right to do. And this, as I say, this is interesting. I'm glad we talked about this before and now. It's an interesting case. I'm going to keep tabs on it and see what happens. I doubt it's going to be quick, because these things never are, right? But I do think that this is a major issue in regards to consumer rights. You know, it was an employee. Whichever way you look at it, whichever way you cut the mustard, it was an employee. You know, and if Deliveroo employed this person, whether they want to admit to that or not, whether they want to face up to that fact or not, and you and I don't want to use any specific examples because we're not supposed to talk out of class, but you know, you and I have probably come across this, you know, with various things of something goes missing or some altercation maybe happens with someone. Okay, why was that person in that area at that time? That's not actually what they're signed to do. Oh, they subbed it out to somebody else because it was Saturday. They wanted to go home early, for instance. Such things don't really happen now, but they did happen a long, long time ago. And these are the kind of situations we came across. You know, if management didn't know something like that was happening, they're liable. Now, if it's liable in one company, they should be liable in any other. Simple as that, certainly my position on it. Would that, do you add to that, Dave, or should we move on to the next one?
Well, just to add, if that gentleman does take a... now, get this... If that person wins a private claim in a county court, which actually the county court costs could actually be more than the person would look seeking as recompense, by the way, no doubt Deliveroo is going to claim some of that money back as well. I mean, it won't affect the guy's claim, but they will, as a third party, they will try to get some of that money back as well, and they can legally. So if the employee has gone off sick for 3 days, they will claim that 3 days' money back. John?
Yeah. All of that is accurate. And as you said, yeah, they would indeed be liable. The legal cost thing always winds me up, actually. It's one of the many things that winds me up. I've had another example of something recently that's maybe this is something we should talk about more in a different stage, which is the whole thing of elderly care and members, you know, younger members of your family having to sell your property in order to, or your property you might have left them in order to be able to afford your care. I think that's absolutely disgraceful way of treating people, especially when they've contributed in decades of their life to working and keeping the country maintained in one way or another.
Sorry, John. When I grew up, and it was a long time ago, there were things like that to protect those people. It was called Social Security, and they've changed the narrative to benefits now. John?
Yeah, Social Security is a good term for it. But I say, I'm getting off on another one there. I will, when we come at the end of the show, I will give, if you remind me, I'll give you a shout out to people about a subject I would like to cover on a future show. But now's not the time. I want to carry on with this. But what I would say in closing for this particular story to Stephen Jenkinson is, if you're listening or if anyone can get this into his hands, sorry about the thumb joke and cannibalism. I couldn't resist the temptation. It's a good gag, though. But secondly, no, I'd happily talk to you on this show at some point. I mean, it sounds to me like, you know, if you're taking, you've got a lawyer in your pocket, that's no bad thing, and you're taking the action you need to. But you know what? I'd happily speak to you in more detail about this. Because one of the things that interests me as a great believer in trade unionism is building bridges. Hopefully bridges that are stronger than the one in Baltimore that we just saw. But I just want to see there to be actually some solidarity built between workers and customers in this sort of situation, because this is an example of, so it could be a customer thing, you know, when it comes to a food delivery app, you flip a button on your phone, your food shows up, you don't really give a toss who brings it, who they are, where they live, how they work. If that's the way you are and how the way you engage with the world, then that's up to you. But I think this is an interesting example of how you're seeing that even the customer does not benefit from these companies being as lax as they are, as devoid of responsibility. That's what it comes down to. They're devoid of responsibility. And that not only affects their workforce, which is disgraceful in itself, it affects you and me as consumers and customers. And, you know, you've always got to think of these things. It's not merely a question to say, oh, well, you know, don't use those platforms. I already don't, but I still think they should bear responsibility for their workforce, for their safety, for basic duty of care, as Dave has just pointed out. And actually, I don't even think that's a particularly lefty opinion. I think that's actually a pretty mainstream one. I'd be interested to see anyone who disagrees with it. Again, I'm happy to be challenged. So if anyone thinks Deliverer are right for not having this, feel free to contact us.
Well, just on that, John, it's important for people to recognise that over the last 40 years, there's been a huge push, certainly in here in America, for that business model, for self-employed contracts or zero-hour contracts. It's been going on for 40 years. I know it's a new word, but it has been gearing towards that for the last 40 years. It's a business model that, and this is part of the Brexit thing, the Duty of Care Act is, and it's a Human Rights Act actually, is part of the European Court of Human Justice, European Rights, anyway, European Rights, Human Rights. These are the things that were going to fall off in Brexit, and probably would have disappeared if there wasn't an election. I'm sorry to be political, really sorry about that. I know you're bored of it, but this is...
We're never sorry you're being political.
Well, some people say, well, you're just being anti-Tory. I'm not, I'm just saying. I'm just saying.
Well, don't listen to the fucking show then. I've been an Itoi for most of my life.
Saying that
we've been doing this since 2018. Are you honestly telling me anyone who's got a problem with your Itoi is still listening? Sorry, go on, Dave.
Well, yeah, you're right, John. And look, I don't care what party is. I'm just telling you, people, it's been happening for the last 40 years. The business model is to take all the responsibility off the employer, and that includes your annual leave and your sick leave. Any sort of cost to the employer. Because the idea that we were sold on is that all that money would go to the employer. They would then pay a huge amount of tax and it would trickle down and we would see that wealth. That was the plan or the myth, right? That's it. And it's not working. As you can see, go to your doctor, go to your hospital. As John said, you know, you spend all your life paying tax, and in order for you to get care, they have to sell your property because that's your wealth, isn't it? That's all our wealth is, the property, which is gone now. As you can see with all this other stuff about people smashing companies up and nationalised companies or previously nationalised companies walking off with huge amounts of profit and the taxpayer gets the bill, this is the business model. John?
Yeah. 100%. I mean, this is the political reality of what we're living in, which is, again, as I say, taking responsibility away from companies. It's so I so detest this from so many different angles, and one of them is a really basic one. It's just so bloody childish. You know, you want all of the toys to play with, but no responsibility for taking care of them. So, fuck off. Anyway, coming up in a moment, we have. And I'm glad Dave mentioned something along these lines earlier on. We have another edition in our occasional segment called Who's Going to Pay For It? But first, on the basis of the last story, we were talking about the gig economy. Well, let's jump into another story here because this relates to it. So we'll go from one to the other. Spain versus the gig economy. So from an article in Tribune by Ergan Gilmartin, this is an interesting story of how a government is willing to clamp down on bogus self-employment, which we've been talking about already tonight, whilst not being afraid to make the gig companies angry in the process, nor for that matter being afraid of a long-term fight that they're going to have in this to make this process take place. So, 2021, Spain passed pioneering legislation against the use of bogus self-employment categorisation in the on-demand delivery sector. The Riders Law addressed the gig economy model of hiring as freelancers on per delivery pay. As we all know, this is a trick to drive down labor costs for the likes of Deliveroo and Just Eat and all the other companies around the world, and produces a precarious workforce on poverty pay. Yet our society seems to increasingly rely upon them. The law addresses that, stating that app-based couriers are instead classified as employees of the platform, and that becoming entitled to standard workers' rights, such as fixed hourly wage and sick pay, is actually their right. This has been beneficial to a minority of couriers so far, giving them a proper work structure, meaning more meaningful time off and things like that. A guarantee of 40 hours a week, and even the chance to take a holiday, God forbid. Plus, delivery platforms now provide workers with a bike and a uniform. Blimey, it's almost like a real company. Some workers are even quoted in Tribune in the article talking about how nice it is to have a weekend and hang out with their families. The spoiled bastards, who do they think they are? The companies have been up to their usual tricks, their usual tricky little selves, however, in trying to avoid this law. The two largest platforms in this country are Deliveroo, yes, them again, and Glovo, that's G-L-O-V-O, in Barcelona. And they have continued to employ more than 80% of their rider workforce as freelance. According to Gilmartin's article, quote, of the 30,000 on-demand couriers in Spain, only approximately 5,000 actually have employment status, end of quote. This kind of corporate revolt shows how difficult it is to enforce this kind of legislation, which is often given as an excuse for not bothering with it in the first place. The present Spanish government is having to play catch-up all of the time due to the country's sanctions regime being quite outdated. Plus, as in many other countries, especially around Europe, austerity has made this much more difficult. In this case, the Labour Inspectorate has been drastically reduced in their funding and therefore in their abilities to actually hold companies like this to account. All of this while the media took the opportunity to suck up to their paymasters and claim that the law is a failure. You know, why did they bother? These stupid idealistic lefties, blah, blah, blah. But Spain's government has not given up. The trade union, Comisión Obreras, has praised this law, saying that the law itself is sound and it requires the political will to face down the platforms who are refusing to enact it. Also, Deliveroo has apparently left the country now, but they've said they've left by their own claim because they were losing market share. And of course, the reason they were losing market share is because the race to the bottom that they in fact initiated with the per delivery pay model has backfired on them quite drastically, with other companies now doing it much cheaper than Deliveroo. So basically, they shut down a lot of their operation in Spain because it just wasn't beneficial. Some people said, oh, the law has chased them out. Yeah, well, you know what? There's a million and one of these companies around the place anyway. So who gives a shit if you chase one of them out of the country? There'll be another one. Well, there's already three to replace them. By the way, see also parcel delivery companies, folks. So right here in Britain, where we're talking to you right now, have a little look at what's just happened with Yodel, what's going to happen with Evri, et cetera, et cetera. You know, bankruptcy, is that a word? Bankruptcy, amalgamation or buying out into a bigger company, et cetera, et cetera. So you've got 700 parcels companies going to go down to three eventually because they're going to buy up all of the little ones. That's fairly obvious. So, you know, Deliveroo left Spain, so what? So this is the basis of where we are with this. Corporations have been allowed to accumulate far too much power and completely undemocratically. So when a national law is passed by a government, that would be an elected government as part of an election system that happens every 4 years or so in most countries, they will refuse to obey it. And weak governments refuse to call them out on it. See also Ireland, where they refuse to make Google actually pay their taxes. Bunch of pussies. But Spain is refusing to do that. Labour Minister Yolanda Díaz is looking at bringing criminal charges against company executives. Spain is now becoming a test case for enforcing employment rights in the gig economy. And as a test case, that means it's going to take a little while, as I say, for this to go through. So don't be expecting immediate headlines. Nothing we do is quick, okay, from a trade union perspective. Dear God, it is irritating and winds many of us up and leads to many a sleepless night. But nothing we do is quick. But everything we do works over a long term because we refuse to back down and give up on absolutely anything. Glovo has been fined large quantities, but has delayed payment multiple times, launching constant legal appeals against payment. This is why many in the movement are calling for criminal law to be introduced to these proceedings. Grassroots riders groups have already begun lawsuits against two platforms, including accusing Uber Eats of engaging in criminal organization. That's a direct quote. Plus, the Unidas Podemos coalition has changed the law, mandating that future financial penalties be paid up front before any appeals process takes place, along with making false self-employment practices a criminal offence in Spain. I think that's a really sharp move, actually. You get this fine, you pay it up front, you want to appeal it, you do it later, but you better pay it now. Good move. The Labour Ministry has issued final warnings to Glovo and to Uber Eats, and criminal charges are expected in the coming months. So there's everything to play for here, because, of course, if this takes place in one country, it will have an effect all over the world, most notably in Europe to begin with, as Spain is a European country. But I think it will go even further out to that. So, there's some other aspect to this, by the way, which was about the amount of, so there's been the usual thing about migrant workers. Actually, you know what? Let me quote the article directly. I don't normally do this, but I will do. Hold on. Where am I? I should have done this beforehand. According to someone that the article spoke to, who's president of the workers' committee in Glovo Madrid, there is very little meaning for those working as freelancers. Unlike initially when platforms recruited among Spanish students, two-thirds of riders are now migrants and many are undocumented. On average, they only work with Glovo for somewhere between 6 to 9 months as they sort out their residency or seek out more stable employment. For them, our struggle can seem quite abstract. End of quote. Yet, he points out, the person they're speaking to here, points out in the example of one of his colleagues who was hit by a rubbish truck at the start of 2023 to demonstrate what is actually at stake. Okay, another quote here. Luckily for me, he worked in Glovo's grocery delivery service, which is part of the company's of the company where riders are directly employed, and so was eligible for the 8 months of sick leave he needed to recover from his three fractured vertebrae. If he had been a freelancer, what would he have done? It's very common for self-employed riders to continue working after accidents, even with broken bones. What choice do they have? So just another little example there at the end. You say about, oh, a migrant workforce, they come and go, we can't employ them. Yeah, well, if you pass this legislation in the first place, if you pass these rules and collective bargaining within the company, then they are susceptible to that, whether they talk to you or not, whether they stay for a long time or not, whether they, you know, engage, whatever. In fact, if anything, I'd argue what we really want is a closed shop. So you start working here, you're automatically in the union. But that's just my opinion. Dave, take that one apart. What do you think?
Well, again, John, it's so what you'll find is we're countries or unions challenge working rights and take it to the appropriate just judicial forum, i.e. the employment tribunal, what you'll find is you'll get a challenge from their government in that, and the government will appeal that on every step of the way. So it will fail the initial judicial hearing. That then goes to an appeal. It will fail that. It will then go to High Court of that country's forum, judicial forum. It will fail that, and then it will go to the Supreme Court, and it will fail that. They will appeal it, knowing fully well they will lose it. But what I'm saying is, John, is no one's actually come out and said the financial security, not because you want to work whenever you want to work, not that, I'm not saying that, because that's for the people they keep putting on these programs, these actors. No one's come out and said the financial security of what, you know, the good of it, where you know what you're budgeting for next month, you know, and you're able to pay your rent for the next 12 months, and how you're able to budget with a 0 hours contract. And I'm not just saying Britain, Spain is making a move on that, or protecting that, in America as well. No one's actually from the government is coming out and saying, well, we want people to be on 0 hour contracts, but this is how we're going to fix your financial security of 0 hour contracts or precarious contracts. I haven't heard an argument for. I haven't. Apart from the actors you keep putting on these talk shows saying, well, I like working where I want, when I want. Those are actors. You're not real. Stop the theatre and come out and tell us why you want us on 0 hour contracts and why you want more power to the employer. Tell us how financially well off we'll be. Tell us that we'll be able to get an appointment at the doctor's. Tell us that we can go to A&E and we won't have to sit there for 12 hours. You know, tell us how we're going to pay for the interest rate rise with the mortgage lenders. That's if you have a home. And that's going to be passed on to renters anyway. Tell us the benefits financially of 0 hour contracts, Mr. Government, wherever, whatever government you are. Tell us. John?
All of that. I agree entirely. You know, this is one of the worst things, I think, actually, is this. It's a kind of the slow degradation that we've gone through. You know, a little bit of this, this job gets worse, that job's terms and conditions get worse, they fuck with this union or that union, this industry shuts down, you know, they're just kind of slowly pushing you away from collective action. And we all know that's the only way to get the thing done, and that's why we continue to do it. And it's just sad. Don't let them get away with it. And one of the other things, don't let them get away with is distraction. Okay, so endless headlines about whatever the royals are doing right now. All of them seem to be catching diseases by the looks of it. But I don't really care what they're doing, and I'm not interested. This is the kind of thing you should be focused on. And I do love this thing where I've often had this argument with people. Because I can be quite opinionated on things, you might have noticed, where they said to me, you can't tell people what their business is. Listen, Sunshine, you sell your labour in the same way I do. So the stuff we're talking about here, this is your business. I'm telling you what your business is. this here, this is what we're talking about, right over here, this is your business and my business and every other working person's business, okay? And every other working class person's business, whatever term you want to use. Boom, that's your business.
John,
so
I think
get this sorted first.
I think as a society, if wherever you live, in whatever part of the world, and you have free healthcare, and thank God for that, I do, you know, if the government of the day has decimated that or for some reason reduce that service, that wonderful service, or where we can't look after people in a care home after they've devoted their whole life to paying their taxes. If your government has reduced that or decimated it, come election time, in my view, because every 4 years, every government, Western capitalist government, absolutely cacks themselves because it's the only time we get to choose who we want. I think that government who has done that to that wonderful service or services, they shouldn't just be beaten at the election. If you're a member of the public, they shouldn't be just beaten. They should be decimated at the ballot box.
They should be beaten in the street.
They shouldn't be just beaten. They should be decimated to nothing, because that is a prized thing in your country, and you should be proud of that if you have that. And if they've reduced that, for their own benefit, because that's what it is. Let's not mess about with it. They've only decimated it for the betterment of themselves. They haven't done you any favours. If they've reduced that wonderful service like free healthcare and social security for the vulnerable in your societies, wherever you are in the world, they should be decimated at the ballot box. If you let them back in and vote for them, shame on you. Shame on you. John?
Yeah, I mean, there is. We talk about this all the time, and it's something we could just go into, could really delve into in a great deal. And I could talk to anyone on this subject, you know, from a any kind of social theorist to a psychologist, even. But it's just the deeply ingrained level of self-hatred that British people have for them. It's just incredible, you know, snapping at the people around you, or just anyone who's beneath you in some way, or you perceive to be beneath you, or economically, or any of those kind of things. It's just constantly that sort of thing, you know. America has a degree of it too, actually, and I'm sure other countries have their own version. But it's particularly sharp in this country. It's like there is this idea that no one here deserves anything nice. Nobody here deserves anything. You don't even deserve a functioning train system, God forbid one that's actually subsidized or free would be better. You don't deserve infrastructure. The buildings your children go to school in should have the roofs cave in, and nothing should ever be done about it. You know, it's and yes, people should work their whole lives and then have to sell off everything that they own in order to take care of themselves, because they've had the temerity to live a few years longer than the government would have preferred that they did. The state, it's not one government or another. The state would prefer they did, because the state now refuses to actually, you know, provide resources for them. And again, these are from the same kind of quarters of all of this kind of self-hatred and condemnation of those of us who stand up against it, and attacks from the, you know, the kind of multicultural, multi-ethnic, multi-gender, but I don't really believe in gender, but you know what I mean, they're all across the board, yeah, for us, for daring to exist, you know, and for us daring to take to the streets over an international issue that Britain's grubby, nay, filthy little hands are deeply embroiled in. You know, how dare we take to the streets and demand that children not be bombed or starved to death with British-made weapons in a country that's only in the state it's in because of British history, the history you always want to put a veil over and then attack anyone who dares to take that veil off. Get a hold of yourselves, okay? You don't, from your children having a school to go to you throughout your working life, through your old age, or even your elderly relatives now actually having the care that they need in order to get through life, that they deserve. Okay. And why do they deserve it? Because they're a human being. That's why they deserve it. I'm absolutely sick of it. Pull your head out of your ass.
Add to that, there's a growing thing, certainly amongst the right-wing media in most parts of the world, and certainly in this country anyway, that the things aren't available, or the overcrowding of the A&E, or the lack of GP services, or, you know, the lack of service industry jobs that you feel the reason being is you say that all this stuff and all this stuff that's not available at the moment, not just in the service industry but in essential services, are the fault of immigrants or people coming on boats. The fact of the matter is that the people that would normally do those jobs can't come here anymore to do those jobs. Nurses, and as I said, there was a huge Filipino community that and African that work in the NHS. You forget that, don't you? Those people can't come here and do that work anymore. And so you can't, it just seems to be a blame on migrant workers decimating this country, you know. Or Bethnal Green doesn't look like it used to be, that sort of comment, you know. Look, everything that's wrong and not working in this country is not because of the population, okay? It's a political decision, okay? That's it. It's simple as that. And by the way, those countries that you moan about, they treat their elderly like royalty, by the way. They treat their elderly, their senior citizens, like royalty. I mean, they so much respect. You go to places like Turkey and Greece, for example, they treat their elderly senior citizens like royalty. Here, they'll just freeze to death. John?
Yeah, I mean, just on that quickly, and I will move on to the next section in a minute. But so what did I get today? I got a headline from the BBC. Just before I came upstairs to do this, a headline on the BBC. Sophie Raworth told me that a record number of people came on a boat today, on a boat from came into to Britain. A record number. I stood there. I awaited the huge number to drop upon me. You know, I could not fathom how large this could be, amount of people coming in on boats. 388, did she say? 368? Basically just under 400. I can't even remember it now. Under 400. Okay. Lest I remind you, dear listener, that it was only a little while ago when Boris Johnson, who many of you voted for because you were afraid of the allotment man, he presided over the COVID-19 pandemic in this country, which killed 170,000 plus people. Okay. Less than 400 people on a boat is not going to be a problem. We haven't got enough room for them. You've got nothing but room, you ponce, because we saw how many people got killed from the clown that you voted for. Okay. Secondly, who are those people? What is their story? What is their story about why they have run away from where they've come from? Take a little look into it and you'll often find a hell of a lot of British connections to it, whether it be weapons sold or political support given, etc., or wars and interventions that we took part in that then failed miserably after 20 years and we had to leave the country, and the very people you supposedly overthrew beforehand just came waltzing back into power like nothing had happened. Yeah, good move. Great military strategy, you fucking numbnuts. Anyway, who are these folks? What is their story? Where do they come from? More importantly, what is their future? What is the future of people on that boat? Well, their future potentially is exactly the same as yours and mine. Hey, these people could be healthcare workers. These people could be tech workers, and they could help build better infrastructure in this country. They could be rail workers and public service workers. They could be athletes. They could win medals for this country, because refugees have done that before. They could get involved in youth organizing groups, and they could pull our young people away from this hateful, nihilistic levels of violence that they are pushed into. And they're pushed into for one reason above all else. It's not because they're inherently bad people, and it's not because of their class, not because of where they come from. It's because they're given absolutely zero hope and opportunity in life. This is the country we live in now. This is a country where its political ideology is one of complete lack of hope. There's nothing going forward. You're never going to break out of poverty. The problem is you're buying baked beans that cost too much, and there's one that's 17p cheaper on the next aisle, and you should be buying them. And if you're not buying them, then it's all down to you. You're irresponsible and a terrible person, a terrible parent. That's what we're being given. Okay, any one of those people on those boats could end up changing things for the better in the future if they're given the opportunity. And so could you. So just reject all of this crap. Okay. Now we're coming to the end. I want to do this one actually in the same vein. The who's going to pay for it segment, christened by Dave, I might add. Do I have to do it in the voice? Who's going to pay for it?
It's going to pay for that. It's going to pay for that.
It's going to pay for that. Who's going to pay for that? Now, this is the name of the segment. However, not everything is relating to money in this, and everything is relating to cost. But nevertheless, it's something where you've got some, what I consider to be like a really blatantly obvious case, you know, a really openly shut thing. But we always just allow ourselves to get, you know, pushed around or kind of, you know, misdirected, shall we say, by this situation. So the one I want to talk about this week is political leverage. Who has it and how is it used? So political leverage. For this segment, I'm going to use a specific example of an issue, in this case, climate change, and an example of a political response from some of our elected officials in certain cases. So when we the people call for a reduction in emissions of fossil fuels, we call for better infrastructure for dealing with the climate crisis, which I haven't actually seen in the mainstream news for weeks. I don't know why. Or even the cutting out of fossil fuels altogether eventually. We're often faced with a variety of what I would categorise as smug teenage responses from the grown adults in Parliament, who, lest I remind you, hold power and exercise power, as per our elected system, around our own adherence to zero emissions and etc. Lots of omission about emissions, lots of distraction. If MPs are telling rival MPs, or even the rest of us, to go and tell China to cut their emissions, etc. Okay, let's break that down. Firstly, most people, MPs especially, can be dismissed immediately on this for acting in very bad faith when they make an argument like this. If this is the attitude they have to life and death issues, then go away. And if you hold a position of power, please go away very, very quickly. If you face the go and tell China or go and talk to your friends in Hamas, etc., or the Houthis or wherever else, okay, the answer to this is very simple. The way to respond is as follows. I am, whether I like it or not, a British citizen. The only base of mainstream political power I can have any effect on collectively is the British political system or things that are related to it, right? As in foreign policy or connections this country has to other countries, you know, which is why I protest Israel, for instance, etc., etc. Now, in the political system, I can protest, I can campaign, I can lobby MPs individually or collectively, and the government to make decisions that I want to see change. But ultimately, they are the decision makers. So the good news is we all have political leverage, just at different levels and over different people and in a variety of places. We, the everyday folk who make the country work, have it via our organising, trade unions, community and faith groups, using the tools to push companies, corporations, and most of all our political representatives to do the things that we believe they should do for a better, more just, more decent society. With that in mind, to the government ministers who try to fob you off with this evasion, my response is, you go and talk to China because that's your job. You want us to believe Britain operates on a global scale, that Britain is a country that anyone cares about outside of these aisles or pays attention to or is any kind of global player, then prove it. But then I think also what will happen, listeners, is at the heart of their response, and you go and tell China, is they know perfectly well that this country is not a major player on the international stage. Nobody gives a shit about this grotty little island where it never stops raining. Okay? It doesn't matter. And it never really did. At the very least, very minimum, since post-Second World War, we've been America's lapdog. And when we're not much use for that, then we're not much use for anything else. The Chinese have actually put us in our place once already by talking about the huge level of operations they have for building, building electric cars. Well, you're still too busy wanking yourself stupid on Twitter waiting for Elon Musk to say that electric cars are woke, even though he actually makes them himself. He doesn't make them, actually, because he doesn't create bugger all, but there you go. So that is my response, a long way of getting there. But to the elected representative who tells me to go and talk to China about their emissions, no, you go and talk to China about their emissions. That's your job. That's what you were elected to do. And if that's not what you are doing directly, then I suggest, could you please go and say, and actually, to be fair, some, including Tory politicians, because that's all I've ever had around my way, have sent me copies of letters they've sent, like, the Foreign Secretary to raise the issue that I've raised with them. Just raising the issue isn't enough. I know it isn't, okay? I'm not stupid. Before all the anarchists stop cracking open cans of beer because, you know, they're so rebellious and yelling at the radio. I know that there's other things to do here, but you can do this if you want to. You can also, for instance, stop supporting Israel with weapon sales for their genocide. It is not predictable that this is a given. You can stop it from happening anytime you want to. Always, every time I can think of it in any show, would need to mention solidarity with Palestinian people, free Palestine from the river to the sea, etc., etc. And yeah, we will never forget, and I personally will never forgive. That's something else. So yeah, Dave, what do you think? Go tell China. What's your position on the go tell China crowd?
Well, I think as I said, we had some, as far back as I can remember, we had some good foreign secretaries of state, and I always use the SDB, who split away from the Labour Party in the early 80s, and they went into oblivion or nowhere in 1989. And rightly or wrongly, they split from the Labour Party. But the quality of politics, where you could have picked any of those five people to be Prime Minister in any era, they would have been that good. Dr. David Owen was a wonderful, brilliant Foreign Secretary of State. And his job was to talk to other countries. That's his job. The trouble of what we've seen here in the UK is a little bit of an island mentality. I'm not slagging off Britain, I'm just saying that we're the masters of nothing. We don't produce anything. We haven't got a steel industry, a coal industry, a car industry anymore. We just borrow things and give it back. And we got to get our heads on, and we got to start talking to other countries, as good politicians should do. Good politicians should do. And I just don't think we got the quality of politics, John. I think we think we're something and we're not. And we got to get our heads on and talk to people like China, the EU, South America. We got to get talking and be good diplomats, good politicians. What's happened to that? And you're right, John. Talk to them. You need to talk to China. In good politicians do that, you know. Even, you know, as I said, I just, that's if they're not resigning. They keep resigning, John, anyway.
Well, as I'd like to think friend of the show, because I've met him once, but a great, great campaigner on Twitter, McStrike, said the other day, are we even going to bother with an election at this rate? Because every seat will have already been filled by the time we get to the election. All the bloody MPs are resigning.
Just resigning, and they're going to reform to another, at the moment here in the UK, they're going to another right-wing party that's actually adamant not to talk to other countries. Just wants to dictate to other countries about how great Britain is. Really?
Yeah.
Really?
Well, Dave has always been the politer and calmer and probably more mentally balanced one between the two of us. So he doesn't wish to slag off Britain. I don't give a shit, actually. Shithole country. But, I mean, the fact of the matter is this kind of ridiculous level of patriotic fever gets more and more meaningless every time I hear it. But I mean, if anything, it runs through the stories we've covered tonight, and anything runs through this whole show, as long as we've done it, is if you want something to be proud of, then build it. I couldn't agree with you more. Have a country that has great workers' rights. Has a country where old people are taken care of, as Dave's just underlined. Have a country that's welcoming to people who can build and feed into this country, which they can. If you want something to be proud of, then do it. But the stuff you're advocating about is gone. Dave just pointed out, it's gone. Oh, we used to be good. Every conversation with these people is, we used to be. Okay, well, A, most of that is based on myth. And B, yeah, we used to be. What about now? Don't talk about industry in this country. They shut it down 40 years ago. What the fuck were you doing then? You're sitting there talking about how old... We just pointed out, you know, no No, coal industry, we shut that down as part of a fight with the trade unions. Well, no, we shouldn't be using coal, but that's a different story. Steel industry and shipbuilding and any of those kind of stuff. What do we do now? So for years and years and years, I used to say this to my dad, we used to watch the news, right? And we'd watch, you know, people moaning about wind farms and whether wind turbines. And like I said, the Germans just got on with building them. And they now they've got a bloody great good big industry that's given them loads of revenue. Why don't you just build them? You don't have to put them up. You're not going to be forced. You know, the wokerati are not going to send a purple-haired teenager around to force you to put a wind farm on top of your house. Sell them to other parts of the world. You know, get involved in a competition like you're always saying you want to do, blah, 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 et cetera, et cetera. Also, tell me, another thing, right? If wind turbines are ugly, what about those massive, great electrical pylons that I see whenever I drive? Well, somebody drives me. One of my drivers drives me up the motorway. What about those? They're absolute blight. Right in the middle of all this lovely green countryside, there's a sodding great metal pylon that buzzes whenever it rains, and there's these wires coming off of it all the time. Why is that more attractive than a wind turbine? Just a pop question for the listeners. Love to hear your viewpoints on that. But I feel like I say it all the time. Go on, Dave. Were you going to say something?
Yeah, sorry, John. A little tip for anyone that's sort of struggling with the economy and jobs and things like that. What you would do is try and get in the peace talks with China and Taiwan, and then try and broker some sort of deal. They'll be an integral part of it. And then do some little exercises with Taiwanese government. They're making things and they're producing things there. And see if we can do a deal where we can get an assembly here in the UK and then ship it back and then don't do any sort of port tax for them. Maybe that might be an answer instead of just shutting off and saying we're an island and we're brilliant. There might be an opportunity there, you know.
Do you know it'd be funny, Dave, if the reform got what they wanted and this island shut itself off from the outside world? We can't produce anything. We import every single thing, right? On one side, there'd be food riots again, which you and me were talking about a couple of months ago. But we'd all end up seeking asylum in other parts of the world because we'll be starving.
Yeah, we have no idea. We have no inkling of what it's like to be bombed. I don't want us to be bombed. We have no inkling of what it's like. Where we have to leave our hair and walk to other countries. We have no idea what it's like living in these places. So, why don't people get off their high horse? You know, and go and talk to people, you know, go to your local law centre and see the immigration issues. And they'll tell you about families that have walked across other countries.
Yeah.
And we don't make anything here. Let's start talking to other countries and see if we can do some business. That's what good politicians do, John.
Yeah. Lay down demands and say this is how our workforce will be treated with the highest possible care and consideration. Yep. So that's what we do. Yeah. There will all be unionized workforce. If you want to come do business here, this is what we're going to do and this is how we're going to do it. Okay. Yeah. Go for it. Push. Give. Make them an offer. Like you say, this is what politicians are supposed to do. This is your job.
I don't know. Anyway, John, listen. I love it when you go, okay, don't talk to me about such and such, okay? It's brilliant. He's like that in real life, folks.
I'm always like this in real life, including grabbing for words in the middle of a point that I'm trying to talk about, which is something that's happened since I've got older. You should have seen me in my 20s. I was amazing. I would stand at the back of gigs with my long-suffering cousin. No, we'd stand at the front, actually. And just before the band came on, I'd just go off on one about whatever was pissing me off at the time. And then we'd just tear up the mosh pit. And then as soon as we finished, I'd start right back at the point I'd left off just before the band came on. I can't even do that. I can't get through a paragraph without getting distracted. Oh, those were the days. I'm doing it. Myth-making. I was never that good. I'm myth-making about my own past. I am British. There you go.
Now, I think there's some valid points being made here. And as I said, the whole bottom line of this show is certainly here in the UK, can we get some good quality politicians? I don't care where you're from, right? Regardless Can we just get some good quality politicians? We need them like yesterday.
Yeah.
Oh, John. Anyway, John,
listen,
many thanks.
Listen,
sorry.
She wanted to run the country down to the point where everything was imported from somewhere that's cheaper. Fine, import cheaper politicians. There you are. Dave's absolutely right. Get a cheaper politician, you know.
The reason why we...
It doesn't fucking matter.
No, because we had... I like to think politicians have a duty of service to their country, whatever that country is. And they love that country and they love their population. Instead of being self-serving, wondering where your next book deal's coming from or what board of directors you're going to be sitting on.
Yeah.
You know, I liked politicians that had a duty, that felt a duty of service to whatever country they're from and did the best they could before they left office, because that's the job. That's what it comes about. But lately, John, I've just lost all faith. And I think the population has lost all faith in these people coming on telly and saying I love my country. It's absolute bollocks.
Just to anyone out there who's a fan, or if he's listening himself, Keir Starmer, or any of his pathetic acolytes, nobody fucking likes you. They just hate the Tories. Okay, that's the very big difference between liking the opposition, actually believing in the opposition, just hating the people who are in power now. Okay, it's just 1992 to 97 in people's minds. Certainly in your minds it is anyway, because you wish it was 1997, you fucking sourdoughs.
Well, as I said, I mean, and anything that any opposition or the leader or whatever says in the Houses of Parliament, it's all theatre anyway. I like politicians that go out quietly and do the business for the country, for whatever country they're from. and it's in their best interest, you know. And again, we've got to start talking to other countries. I think we're making a mistake, you know, John. We're making a mistake by isolating ourselves.
Isolation
really
will
do.
Get you nowhere, especially when you're as weak as this country. I need to bail out and give you people some music because just quickly before we go, if anyone knows anyone who can discuss town planning, and in particular, this sounds very specific, but I'd love to speak to someone who's in charge of town planning in Holston, up the road from here. It's a good thing, as I was very impressed by that town. I've been there recently. I want to talk to you. And basically, this is to do with the fact that I want to talk about high streets and how they fall and how they're just kind of degraded and kicked around in this country, you know. And all the excuses about online shopping, it's not true, because it's not true up and in other countries, and it's not true up and down this country either. Holston is really interesting high street. I'd love to talk to someone, if there was someone out there who's related to the... Maybe I should contact the council. I don't know, but I'm genuinely serious.
Well, we've got a presenter here who's got a shop in Holston High Street. It's Pac-Man, so I may get him on here.
Oh, cool.
And he's had shop there since the 70s, so he has had a family shop, and then he opened up another shop, closed that one, family shop, opened up his own one, and they've both been in Holston High Street.
Maybe I can talk to him if he's willing to come on. If he knows someone, if he can put me in contact with the council, that'd be grand. So I just wanted to say that. Anyway, sorry, thank you, Dave, as ever. And now for you good folks, after an hour's worth of me venting my well-oiled spleen, I think it's time for some music, so take it away.
All the Rage with John Bowd. www.tracksfm.org.